MESCOM will be Dr. Trevor Marshall.
And Dr. Kington, I just want to let folks know that copies of these public comments are available on the handout table.
Thank you, Dr. Kington. Dr. Bruce Fuchs this morning developed the concepts of sugar and castor oil. And at first glance, what I'm about to say might look like castor oil, but it's actually sugar. Your work is very important, but as Michael said earlier in his question, it's very important to anticipate the bumps in the road that are ahead. And as a group that has had quite a lot of interaction with NIH over the past several years, I felt that it would be helpful to the committee to point out how important your work is and where the bumps in the road might actually lie. Because time is brief, I'm going to skip significant portions of the printed document that you have there. So if you need more detail, the detail is in the printed document. I'll just go over the surface. This submission is intended to emphasize the importance of quickly implementing the COPR's recommendations, to request that attention be paid to guiding NIH policy when the science is equivocal, and to suggest much more rigor in NIH's use of consensus statements. Sarcoidosis is a member of the class of diseases called idiopathic, those having no known cause and no known cure. It is a silent killer, having recently taken the lives of NFL star Reggie White, Chicago's NBC5 sports anchor Darian Chapman, and the noted cardiologist Marty Rosenthal. Sarcoidosis also destroys careers and families. Actor Bernie Mac and actress Tisha Campbell-Martin recently announced that they are struggling against this disease. Overall, about 134,000 Americans are having their lives diminished and destroyed by sarcoidosis. In 2001, we identified that sarcoidosis is caused by a special class of antibiotic-resistant bacteria. We published a detailed scientific pathogenesis and put together a large community-based study of a novel antibacterial therapy. The study cohort is recruited and coordinated using the internet. Last month alone, over 40,000 individuals visited our two internet study sites. We recently held an international conference in Chicago where it was confirmed, in fact, that our therapy is, in fact, a curative therapy for sarcoidosis. And further, that exactly the same antibacterial therapy is also proving an effective treatment for some of the other chronic idiopathic Th1 autoimmune diseases, including chronic fatigue syndrome, which is fairly extensively covered on the record of the conference, the DVD record of the conference. I'm going to skip a whole page here. At our conference, near the bottom of page 2, at our conference it was amazing to see the attendees, both physicians and patients, bubbling with excitement. Nobody who sees the DVDs of the conference can escape the excitement amongst both physicians and patients. There were presentations and panels discussing both the science and the process of recovery from this deadly disease. Yet Dr. Kiley, one of our speakers, director of NHLBI's Division of Lung Diseases, NHLBI is the National Heart, Lung and Blood Institute, apparently saw and heard nothing. Nobody from NHLBI picked up the telephone and asked, "What's going on? Please tell us more." Which is really what the public would expect, I think. When the foundation eventually phoned Dr. Kiley, we found that there will be no follow-up, that NHLBI does not feel under any pressure to listen to the community. NHLBI sees no duty to investigate whether a cure for any disease has or has not been found. NHLBI perceives its business as purely to fund worthwhile academic research. It feels no sense of urgency. It sees no direct role and responsibility for the public health, or health education, or to the Americans suffering from this dreadful degenerative disease. This shows how important it is to implement the committee's recommendation number one, namely, incorporate into the NIH mission and philosophy that it values the involvement of the community in research and create language that expresses this value. It also shows a degree of institutional resistance that may be expected to the Public Trust Initiative's primary goals of providing opportunities to participate in priority setting and other NIH activities, and opportunities to participate in clinical research. It is important to remember that NHLBI is the NIH's second largest institute. Disclaimer, please understand that my analysis of Dr. Kiley's speech and actions in no way implies that he himself may hold the goals he was presenting on behalf of NHLBI. Attached is the booklet, Facts About Sarcoidosis, the only publication that the NHLBI is disseminating to fill the educational need, about a 10-page brochure. This booklet is riddled with errors and bad science. Physicians who read it are encouraged not to treat their patients, but to wait for the disease to go away. And then, when it does not spontaneously resolve, tell the patient that they are one of the unlucky few who have developed the chronic form of the disease. Yet NHLBI's own huge access study, conducted between 1994 and 2002, found that sarcoidosis does not go away, with or without treatment, and noted that end-stage disease can be expected 10 to 20 years from diagnosis. None of this is in the Facts About Sarcoidosis booklet. During 2003-2004, this foundation carefully documented these errors and asked the NHLBI to correct them. And attachment two is a letter which lists all of the contacts between ourselves and the NHLBI. There are numerous ones. If you need any details of the studies that we gave them, we'd be happy to give them to you. The NHLBI's response has been to exclude us from the ongoing document revision process, saying it couldn't afford the manpower to look through the studies we had cited. When we produced our own leaflet, highlighting the key conclusions from the ACCESS study that we thought NHLBI had overlooked, we were told that they wouldn't help us distribute that leaflet. COPR recommendations number 5 and 9 would have made it quite clear that NHLBI's duty to share the best available scientific knowledge with the public, and especially to make sure that patients are honestly informed of the true prognosis of this terrible disease and not misled to believe that they have contracted a mild condition. In August 2003, we formally notified NHLBI that we thought we had developed a curative therapy for sarcoidosis, and that the therapy had been derived from an understanding of the cause of the disease, antibiotic-resistant bacterial pathogens. We are not the first research team to suspect a bacterial pathogenesis, although we are the first to develop a curative therapy. Our results should have been no surprise to NHLBI. But NHLBI refused to discuss the possibility that sarcoidosis could be caused by antibiotic-resistant bacteria. You can see that clearly in attachment 2 towards the end, page 4 and 5. They also refused to recognize that the ACCESS study had identified that the disease appeared to be communicable, especially transmission between husband and wife. No warnings were issued that spouses or families could be at risk, even though transmission of sarcoidosis via transplanted organs has been reported several times. The NHLBI has thus allowed sarcoidosis to proliferate unchecked and untreated. We've just been told that the NHLBI is apparently saying that over the last 2 years, sarcoidosis has spiraled out of control. And, according to them, there may now be more than 200,000 Americans with this disease. 200,000 is the threshold of the Rare Diseases Act, and if confirmed, this alleged growth in disease prevalence would give back to the NHLBI total control over money for sarcoidosis research, freeing it from responsibilities defined in the Rare Diseases Act, which include informing the public about the disease. We believe that if the COPR's recommendations were already in place, the NHLBI staff would never have contemplated attempting to perpetrate such politics. No institute should be rewarded for compromising the health of our community. So in summary, NIH needs to understand that it must not base policy solely upon the advice of consultants, even industry experts, who may have a financial conflict of interest which reduces their incentive to disturb the status quo. This is especially true in the rare diseases, when only a handful of experts might be available. The NIH must understand these experts represent failure, or else the disease wouldn't be idiopathic. There'd be a cause and there'd be a cure. Scientific rigor must be applied to any and all consensus statements in the idiopathic diseases. NIH must be more inclusive and not exclusive. Significant scientific controversies should be reported to the public, in our opinion, and not swept under the rug. We don't see mention of this, the reporting of controversies, in the COPR recommendations, and we'd urge the committee to consider guidelines to be followed when the science is equivocal. It's clear that the public desperately needs a health agency which encourages the development of curative treatments to balance farmers' focus on more profitable palliative treatments. Although recommendation number 3 mentions that the public is seeking a cure, we believe that this needs to be emphasised, as none of the NIH staff with whom we have been negotiating would contemplate setting cure as a research goal, and when confronted with our cure, they just don't know what to do. Finally, we believe that the NIH and the community need to join forces to develop plans for rapid clinical investigation of apparently successful interventions, especially where established NIH institutes do not seem to have any interest in conducting such evaluations. At the very least, the community needs assistance to complete comprehensive analyses of study results. We believe that a wide range of diseases are probably in need of such procedures, and we offer sarcoidosis as a model for all the diseases with an intervention in need of rapid clinical evaluation. Perhaps this could be a trans-NIH roadmap activity to reshape the NIH clinical research emphasis and develop an NIH rapid response clinical investigation unit to oversee such activities. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Dr. Marshall.
Dr. Marshall, I don't have any information about the Autoimmunity Research Foundation and how you work. Could you give us some information about how you develop your knowledge and how do you compare the processes that you use in your foundation versus the NIH processes of this institute that you're quoting here to see whether these differences here have to do with the different criteria that organizations might have?
Is this one on?
Yeah.
Firstly, we formed the Autoimmunity Research Foundation early in 2004. Prior to that, the board of directors, most of the board of directors, had been serving on the National Sarcoidosis Society San Francisco section. Unfortunately, the founder of that section died of sarcoidosis in November 2003. And the section was wound up. So we therefore formed the Autoimmunity Research Foundation. But we've been working as a team, a devolved internet team now, for I guess 3-4 years. You're referring in terms of difference in standards. You're talking about difference in endpoints in terms of curative therapy, or are you talking about other aspects of the project?
Yeah, the question is, because it seems that you were interested in having some material published or referred to, and it didn't happen. But
no, we were interested in the NHLBI correcting their material that they were distributing to the public in order to reflect the results of their own study, the ACCESS study of 1994 to 2002. That was our initial primary goal with NHLBI. the fact that events have overtaken us in terms of the effectiveness of what we've been doing really just works concurrently with that. But if you look at the communications between ourselves and NHLBI, which are catalogued there in Attachment 2, the letters from my colleague Belinda Fender to Barbara Owen, the then director of NHLBI, you'll see that primarily we were interested in making sure that the public is told the truth about this disease rather than the mythology. I have a paper actually down at my seat called Sarcoidosis Mythology. It was written by two of these access study investigators. Can I just have a second to get it, because the first sentence is very important. These are two NIH investigators that were the primary authors here. They say, sarcoidosis continues to be shrouded by anecdotal misinformation which has gained credence by repetition. And that's really what we're dealing with. And the brochure that the NHLBI is putting out is anecdotal. It's based on a variety of consensus statements, none of which could be traced back to studies or sources of authority. But because of the repetition that gained the credence, NHLBI puts out this brochure. It says, this disease is not a fatal disease. Somebody needs to tell Bernie Mac that he has a serious disease, because his physician doesn't know that, and he doesn't know that. We know that. Of the 40,000 unique visitors to our websites, I can count the number of people who have had this disease resolved on one hand. And then when we question those people, we find that anybody with biopsy-diagnosed sarcoidosis never recovers. Never. And yet the NIH booklet says 60% will recover without any treatment. And this particular paper goes on to detail some of the sarcoidosis mythology, and that is one of the issues that they bring up.
Thank you.